And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I seem to have swallowed that proverbial frog that is a problem with every radio announcer in the world at one time or another. But what the hell, we'll try and swallow that frog and get right on with our commentary. Today's commentary is from an editorial in the Denver Rocky Mountain News, and it's entitled, "Unhealthy Forests Desperately Need Treatment." The raging fires set recently by the United States Park Service in New Mexico's Bandelier National Monument warn of dire consequences unless significant action is taken to address forest health problems in the United States. Our national forests and parks are at risk. The Forest Service has testified before Congress on several occasions that decades of errant fire suppression practices and mismanagement have left 40 million acres of national forest lands at risk to catastrophic wildfires and in need of immediate treatment. Our national forests are losing their diversity and ecological integrity at an alarming rate. With no competition, the dense understory of shade-tolerant Douglas fir has choked out the hardy, fire-resistant ponderosa pine so typical of historic western forests, that's southwestern forests. In many cases, the forest understory has grown so thick as to be impassable for people or wildlife. Our forests are losing their ecological integrity to dense, overmature stands that invite fiery infernos, insect infestations, disease, and decay. In fact, there has been an unprecedented increase in the annual net growth of national forests since the turn of the century. Gone are most of the savanna open meadows that have dotted the forest, memorialized with old photographs and pioneer journals. Gone are the vast inventory of grasses that once flourished and the berries and willows that provided abundant forage for wildlife. The federal government's General Accounting Office concluded in an April 1999 report to Congress that, quote, the most extensive and serious problem related to the health of national forests in the interior West is the overaccumulation of vegetation, which has caused an increasing number of large, intense, uncontrollable, and catastrophically destructive wildfires, unquote. Those wildfires contribute to destructive sediment loading and tremendous environmental degradation. Healthy forests have a diversity of age classes of trees and successional stages, but forest overgrowth has outpaced harvest on suitable lands by roughly 400%. Meanwhile, timber sale targets in the United States Forest Service Region 2, that's the Intermountain West, have decreased from 385 million board feet in 1988 to 191 million board feet in 1999, staggering 50% decline. Not surprisingly, timber harvest causes only 2% of tree mortality in the state. Disease and insects are by far the most common killers of trees. Prescribed burns alone are insufficient to treat these forest health problems. Besides impacting visibility and air quality, prescribed fires like the one set by the Park Service in New Mexico can be deadly and destructive. Let us not forget the many Colorado firefighters who have lost their lives trying to protect our communities and homes. Moreover, reckless fire leads to massive environmental degradation. The 1996 Buffalo Creek Fire on Colorado's Front Range left soils baked and fused, preventing revegetation and choking the streams and Denver's water supply with sediment and sludge. U.S. Forest Service scientists and silvicultural experts have determined that selective, carefully executed patch cuts consistent with federal laws and the authorizing statutes of our national forests could help treat these forest health problems while restoring flows in our watershed. A combination of sound management options, including prescribed fire, understory thinning, and other treatments is desperately needed. Selective vegetation management should be used to minimize destructive wildfires, treat forest health problems, and restore watersheds so our government can avoid future tragic embarrassments like the Bandelier National Monument fire. And Uncle Dennis would like to point out that this not-too-sympathetic treatment was from the Denver Rocky Mountain News, published May 26th. And I'd like to point out that a lot of that forest thinning doesn't have to be clear-cutting. All right? Just wanted to point that out. Okay? Here's a request from the Red Gate Earth First. These folks are outside of Rockford, Illinois. They write that they're getting involved with an imminent domain battle outside of Rockford, Illinois. The county is building a $2 million road through a number of houses. Some people are trying to organize one landowner who's in the way. is a blind war veteran and has 4+ acres of beautiful wetlands. He's invited Earth Firsters to come and camp on his forest land and help him defend it. He's also got some of his vet friend involved. If anyone or you know how to get the NEPA ball rolling, get in touch with Redgate Earth First. Their email address, friends@enteract.com. That's friends@enteract.com. And see if we can help out those folks in Rockford, Illinois. I'm sure they could use your help. And the British Columbia Supreme Court has thrown out the injunction which kept anti-logging protesters away from the Inter 4 logging operations in the Alajo Valley near Squamish, British Columbia. Mr. Justice David Vickers says that since the injunction was granted last September, the court has witnessed vigilante actions, misrepresentations, and lies. He was referring to a raid by loggers on the environmental protesters' camp. He says efforts by Inter 4 supervisors to prevent the destruction and rampage were feeble and ineffective. Barney Kern speaks for the protest group Friends of the Alajo. He says that with the injunction gone, the protests will increase. I can pretty much guarantee there isn't going to be much logging north of Lava Creek, he says. We'll make sure of that. Kern also says this ruling should send a message. I'm hoping the message goes back to the politicians, he says, and they figure out some way that we can have dialogue and move forward on forestry issues and environmental issues. Justice Vickers says his decision does not keep Inter 4 from seeking another injunction. And Uncle Dennis says, get your butt up to the Alajo Valley of British Columbia. They can use your help right now. If you're in France, there's a new action camp in the Aspe Valley, A-S-P-E Valley of southern France. The Grown Front, Netherlands Earth First, sent this report. Unfortunately, I was unable to get any more information about it because their webpage is a bummer. It causes your web browser to lock up. I haven't encountered that one before, but here's the news anyway. During the third eviction in 1 week, about 15 people set up in a new tree camp near the site where construction of a highway through the Aspe Valley is about to begin. The camp is the second established by the French and Dutch activists to protest the construction. After the earlier evictions, the third one performed by 100 cops and the prefect, that's the regional head of the government, the camp's trees were cut down, prompting the activists to set up the new camp. Anyway, action in Europe. In Hawaii, anti-biotech activists calling themselves the Menahuni, a Hawaiian term referring to elven folk or little people, struck against the biotechnology industry that has invaded the Hawaiian Islands. In a communique, the Menahuni claim responsibility for the May 9th destruction of a test plot of corn and the mixing of pollen from different corn throughout the test plots to invalidate the experiments, and the May 10th destruction of test crops of fruit at the Kauai Agricultural Resource Center, which is operated by the University of Hawaii at Manoa, and the USDA Agricultural Research Service. The communique states the biotechnology industry has quietly flooded the land with genetically engineered crops, and like to say aloha to all those biotech activists in Hawaii. And on the evenings of May 23rd and May 24th, anti-biotechnology direct action activists harvested the genetically engineered crops, including tomatoes, broccoli, peas, onions, and peppers, in greenhouses of the Seminis Vegetable Seeds Research Center. I believe this is in California. This action by the Future Farmers of America comes just days after a Reclaim the Seeds action in Albany, California, and 2 weeks after the activists in Hawaii uprooted crops at a Novartis research facility. And we just read that one. Moving to Australia, about 300 protesters, both Aboriginal people of the Flinders Ranges and non-Indigenous people, protest against the Beverley uranium mine, which was due to start full production in August. Green groups united with traditional Aboriginal elders of the region in trying to bring a halt to the mine, which they say is poisoning the land by its use of in-situ mining processes, which dump acid into underground aquifers to bring uranium to the surface. The company that owns the mine, Heathgate Resources, says it's business as usual, against the wishes of Aboriginal elders and local environmental concerns. Moving to animal news, a coalition of 13 and conservation groups and an individual plans to sue the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service over its failure to protect the Canadian lynx. The groups notified the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service of their intent to challenge the legal and scientific adequacy of the Endangered Species Act listing rule regarding the lynx, a rare forest cat of North America. The coalition contends that although the lynx is listed as threatened, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service failed to ensure the cat's survival and recovery throughout its historic range in the lower 48 states. Plain and simple, the Fish and Wildlife Service has once again failed in its duty to ensure the conservation of the lynx, said Roger Slickeisen, president of Defenders of Wildlife. The lynx has already been eliminated from most of its historic range in the lower 48 states, yet the agency appears more than willing to allow the cat's continued decline. And a tiny old-growth forest has been protected near Niagara Falls. One of New York's last stands of old-growth forest within an urban setting will be set aside as a state park. The state will purchase the DeVoe campus from the Niagara University and transform the 51-acre property into the DeVoe Woods State Park, featuring 5 acres of old-growth forest, 2 ball fields, and acres of open space. With acres of beautiful trees, some as old as 255 years, DeVoe Woods is one of the most unique open space treasures in New York State, said Governor George Pataki. By creating a new state park on this property, we are protecting an old-growth forest while offering one more incredible recreational and educational opportunity to residents, visitors, and the wildlife in the Niagara Falls region. And the United States House of Representatives had voted to outlaw shark finning, a wasteful practice that kills nearly 60,000 sharks in the Pacific Ocean each year. The nearly unanimous vote sends the bill to the U.S. Senate, where it's expected to face little opposition. Shark finning, which feeds the Asian market for shark fin soup, involves slicing off a shark's fin and throwing the rest of the shark overboard to die. The fins make up between 1 and 5% of the shark's body weight, meaning that 95 to 99% of the shark is going to waste. The bill, H.R. 3535, would not ban the sale of shark fins, but would prohibit landing or possessing shark fins without the entire shark carcass attached in all U.S. federal waters, and as most fishermen lack the storage capacity to transport shark carcasses to shore, the bill would effectively ban most finning. Wisconsin's gray wolf population has reached between 239 and 249 wolves outside of Native American reservations in the state, according to annual surveys taken by state and federal biologists and volunteers. In view of these numbers, it is likely the State Department of Natural Resources in Wisconsin will initiate action next year to remove the gray wolf, also known as the timber wolf, from the state endangered and threatened species list, according to Adrian Widevin, the DNR conservation biologist in Park Falls, who coordinates the state's wolf recovery program. Currently, the gray wolf is listed as a threatened species under Wisconsin law and an endangered species under federal law. A Wisconsin wolf management plan endorsed last year by the State Natural Resources Board called for removing the wolf from the state's list when the population reached a level of 250 for 1 year in Wisconsin outside of Indian reservations. And dirt bikes and ORV vehicles are threatening the Siskiyou ecosystem region in Northern California and Southern Oregon. These vehicles repeatedly tear up wet meadows, wetlands, and other sensitive areas in the Siskiyou National Forest, including designated botanical areas, says the Siskiyou Project. At Star Flat in the $8 Mountain Botanical Area, ORV damage has contributed to the loss of half of the populations of 4 Endangered Species Act candidate species in a critically important serpentine fen, which is a rare plant wetland. ORV damage can permanently change the hydrology of these wetlands. And Port Orford cedar, a beautiful conifer endemic to southwest Oregon and northern California, is being killed by a non-native root pathogen known as Port Orford cedar rot, which is primarily spread by ORVs. Once introduced, there is no effective means to eradicate the root disease, that is, it is irreversible and kills all the trees. It is time for the Forest Service to show some leadership to stop these abuses. Representatives George Miller, a Democrat from California, and Peter DeFazio, a Democrat from Oregon, are circulating a congressional sign-on letter to the Forest Service Chief Mike Dombeck, urging him to strengthen implementation of current ORV regulations, which are not being adequately enforced. If you want more information, contact Melanie Mayock, American Lands Recreation Campaigner. Her phone number, 202-547-9267. That's Melanie Mayock, American Lands Recreation Campaigner. Her number again, 202-547-9267. And 4 Western United States species, 3 plants, and a tiny mammal have been proposed for endangered listing by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The 3 rare plant species known by their scientific names, Nesogenes rotensis, Osmoxylon marianensis, and Tabernamontana rotensis are found only in the U.S. territory of the Mariana Islands, Rota and Guam. They are threatened by loss of their native habitat, which has been altered by ranching, invasive plant species development, and military activities during World War II. In recent years, both islands have been affected by frequent typhoons. 30 or fewer mature plants remain in each of these species. With so few plants remaining, another big storm could eliminate any of the three species, according to Ann Badgley, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Pacific Regional Director. The people of Rota and Guam have an opportunity to save these plants found nowhere else in the world for future generations to enjoy. And the Buena Vista Lake Shrew, a tiny insect-eating mammal that once inhabited the marshlands of the San Joaquin Valley, is on the brink of extinction with only one remaining population. The Buena Vista Lake Shrew, a unique little animal that consumes more than its weight in insects every day, is part of the San Joaquin Valley's historic ecosystem, said Michael Spear, manager of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's California and Nevada Operations Office. It now only occurs on a former preserve on private land in the extreme southern end of the valley and is in danger of extinction. Biologists believe that the Buena Vista Lake Shrew once occurred in many of the marshlands of the Tulare Basin. By the time biologists discovered the shrew in 1932, most of these marshes were drained and dried up by water diversions. Today, the species has lost more than 95% of its historic habitats. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed to designate 478,000 acres in Southern California as critical habitat for the endangered Arroyo southwestern toad. The designation is part of a settlement in a lawsuit brought by the Center for Biological Diversity. As an endangered species, the Arroyo toad already is protected wherever it occurs, and federal agencies are required to consult on any action they take which might jeopardize the species, said Michael Spear, the manager of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife's California Nevada Operations Office. We already knew that. The designation will help the species by ensuring the needs of the toad are. The toads were once found along the length of drainages in the Southern California from San Luis Obispo to San Diego County, but now survive only in small isolated headwaters. Urbanization and dam construction have caused extensive habitat degradation, new development, grazing, mining, and off-road vehicles continue to destroy important habitat. Most of the remaining populations occur on private land or within and adjacent to the Cleveland National Forest. Due to their isolation and small sizes, almost all populations are at risk of extinction. And recently, a federal appeals court in Richmond has upheld the U.S. Fish and Wildlife rules protecting red wolves that wander onto private lands, rejecting the arguments of North Carolina landowners and county officials who had challenged the constitutionality of the regulations and the Endangered Species Act. By a vote of 2-1, the panel of 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that Congress has the power under the Constitution's Commerce Clause to prevent landowners from killing red wolves and endangered species. The case Gibbs v. Babbitt had been closely watched in the wake of the Supreme Court's recent ruling in a separate case that Congress had exceeded its constitutional authority when it passed a law allowing rape victims to sue their attackers in federal court. But the Fourth Circuit's Chief Judge, J. Harvey Wilkinson III, wrote, quote, in contrast to gender-motivated violence, conservation of scarce natural resources is an appropriate and well-recognized area of federal regulation. The relationship between red wolf takings and interstate commerce is quite direct. With no red wolves, there would be no red wolf-related tourism, no scientific research, and no commercial trade in pelts. And there will soon be no leatherback turtles left in the Pacific Ocean, says Drexel University environmental science professor Dr. James Spatilla and his colleagues. Their findings, based on a 12-year study, appeared in a June issue of Nature magazine. The team's findings are based on a survey of the nesting population of leatherbacks in Playa Grande, Costa Rica, the world's fourth largest colony of the species. Using the colony, Spatilla and team constructed a mathematical model of future population trends. Spatilla says this population is in the midst of a collapse. The number of nesting females has fallen from 1,367 in 1988 and 89 to 117 in the last 2 years. Each year, about one-third of the population dies after falling prey to fishing nets or lines. Spatilla and his team concluded that unless there are serious changes to fishing practices in the Pacific, There will be fewer than 50 nesting females in the entire Pacific Ocean by the year 2004. The world's largest turtle, the leatherback, weighs about 800 pounds. They approach land only during the breeding season. Most breed every other year and lay clutches of eggs between 80 and 100 at 10-day intervals before returning seaward. And that's about all we have time for right now. If you'd like to get your news, our announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email. Our email address is cruzef@cruzio.com. That's C-R-U-Z-E-F at C-R-U-Z-I-O.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio. Our address, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And please be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you'd like more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address is P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Once again, that address, Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. You can listen to Earth First Radio on your computer. We have live streaming audio every Thursday night at 8 o'clock Pacific Daylight Time at FRSC at, www.microradio.net/FRSC. That's www.microradio.net/FRSC. Or you can tune us in at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. You'll need a sound card, of course. But the software you need to play the MP3 files is free on the website. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney off the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to some music here. A little thing called The Song of the Trees by John Trudell.
Listen as the trees sing their songs in the wind. Lyrics and melodies for the spirit senses, songs of laughter and life, timeless things in timeless places. Do not be afraid to be strong, do not be afraid to love, but always remember. Always remember, love wisely, the love of being, free of possession, the love of being beyond desire. The love of being, respect for Mother Earth. Listen as the trees sing their songs in the wind, lyrics and melodies for the spirit senses, songs of laughter and life. Timeless things in timeless places. Do not be afraid. Remember the medicine is in the time. Live this life to last. Join the time of tomorrow and the past. Be like us. Serve the creation. We will endure. Listen as the trees sing their songs. Listen. Listen.
Just do something to defend.